What are you doing? Disney is going to sue us.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, two board game podcasters...
This is not any better. Disney is still going to sue us.
Bum, 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 bum.
Hi, I'm Jedi Master Jaina.
And I am Sith Lord Darth Sharon.
No, that doesn't quite have the same ring to it.
Together, we're antsy to gancy in a couple of weeks.
So we are changing some things up. First off, we're going to go to releasing episodes every second week.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you'll have to wait two more weeks from this.
Because time and distance makes the heart grow fonder.
Yes, sure.
Or we're just not organized enough to keep doing this every week for it to be sustainable. We're hoping that we can actually deliver better podcasts and better content if we have more time to procrastinate.
Yeah, like we are imagining that with 2 weeks, we'll have more time to prepare, plan out thoughtful and mm-hmm. insightful episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, it'll just mean we don't have to do this every Thursday evening. Mm-hmm. It'll be every second Thursday evening instead.
Yeah, yeah. Much more manageable. Much more manageable.
Yeah. And on top of that, mm-hmm. we are going to be changing the podcast name. It has been brought to our attention multiple times
mm-hmm.
That Jass's Begancy, every time I have to tell someone the name of it.
Yeah, you have to spell it out.
I cry a little bit. And I love where it came from. If you don't know, go back to episode one.
Mm-hmm. It's an acronym.
It's an acronym.
A poor one, really.
Jaina and Sharon can't even stop buying games, and neither can you.
Because neither can you. But here we are.
And so we will be changing our name from antsy to gancy.
Antsy to gancy. Because that's, you know, every time we are trying to bring you from antsy to gancy.
So we'll need a new tagline.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess antsy to gancy. Taking you from antsy to gancy doesn't have the same ring.
A little redundant.
Okay, well, we'll have to go
work on that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So look for changes coming up in the next couple of weeks.
But hey, you guys all get to be, well, I guess hipsters isn't quite a thing because that's a millennial thing. But you guys get to be the people that are like, well, we listened to this podcast when it was originally called Jass's Begancy. It was so underground that no one really could find it.
It'll still be underground. Don't you worry.
Yeah, we will still be very cool. Don't you worry. Uh-huh. What are we talking about today again?
Right. Well, from our opening, you would think that we're talking about Star Wars games.
Well, we sort of kind of.
We are talking about one Star Wars game. But mostly we finally, it's been a very long time, we went to a board game cafe, just the two of us,
mm-hmm.
and played some games together. It's been a long time since we played multiple games, just the two of us.
I know. It was kind of like a board game date day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so originally we went in thinking that, okay, let's do an episode on two-player games. Not necessarily games specifically designed for two players, but even playtesting games that might have a wider range of, player numbers, but we're going to play it on two players and just test out the game to see whether it, you know, is still just as good or better at two.
Yeah, and it just so happened that our first three games were all space-based.
I think the first game was, and then we were going to just continue on with more space-themed games, and it became the theme of the day, which mm-hmm. is a two-player space game.
Yeah.
We did not play Space Base, despite it being a space-based game.
That would have been too obvious.
That would be too obvious. And we are definitely not too obvious.
100%.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
our first game that we played was The Search for Planet X.
Oh, yeah. I've wanted to play that game for a while, but also I've been incredibly confused because I've been confusing The Search for Planet X with Planet Unknown. So when I had played Planet Unknown a while ago, I thought I had played The Search for Planet X. And I'm like, this is totally different from the deduction game.
It turns out that you were still searching.
I was still searching, but So tell me more about The Search for Planet X. What What lies in our search for such a planet?
All right. So the search for Planet X was designed by Matthew O'Malley and Ben Rossett. Mm. And it was published by Foxtrot Games and Renegade Game Studio, along with a bunch of others. But those are the first two. So that's what we're going with. And in the search for Planet X, you are trying to find Planet X.
What?
I know.
That's shocking. So unexpected.
I know. So it is pretty much a pure deduction game. You each are, I think, researchers trying to figure out where in this kind of, not 3D, but 360 degree circle, which segment Planet X is in. So you're searching, like I said, the circle that's broken into, I believe it's 12 segments or 18 if you're playing on expert mode. And there are five different types of planetary bodies that you're going to be discovering. Mm. There are asteroids, mm-hmm. which are distinct from comets.
Did you know? I got confused multiple times during this game. I was not a good deductionist or researcher for that matter. Asteroids and comets are apparently different things. And if you mess up between the two and start putting on wrong information, you're not going to have too fun of a time playing this game. But carry on.
Fair enough.
Yes.
There's gas clouds. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some empty spaces.
Mm-hmm. Like true empty spaces. Mm-hmm. Because what the intrigue of Planet X is that if you just do a simple search or survey, it's going to appear as though it's empty.
Ooh. Yes. And how you are deducing where Planet X is all of these planets have certain rules, or these, what, star bodies? No, planetary bodies have certain rules.
Mm-hmm. Forgot to mention the dwarf planet too, but... Mm.
Yeah, no one cares.
Okay.
So, for example, it's going to tell you, okay, there are four asteroids. And asteroids are always going to occur next to each other. So you could either have two separate pairs of asteroids, or all four asteroids are going to be next to each other. And each section only has one planetary body. Or it's empty. Or it has Planet X. Mm-hmm. So eventually you're going through, you can scan like huge swaths of sky, which is going to give you, not necessarily, it's going to give you a lot of information. You're searching for, like, say, I could search six segments for asteroids.
To see if there is the presence of asteroids mm-hmm. within those segments and how many.
Yes, it will tell you how many there are. It doesn't tell you where they are other than somewhere within those six segments. And as you go through, you're able to get more and more information about what's out there, and knowing what you know about how these rules work and interact, that's going to help you figure out where Planet X is. One of the other actions you can do is research. So there's kind of base rules for all of these planetary bodies, and each game is going to have a few more kind of extra rules on how certain things interact or where they're located.
And what I like about that is that each time you play, the game is a little different. There mm-hmm. are all of these rules that are common and will be common throughout all the different games about how planetary bodies, I guess, react and respond within the given space. But every game, this is an app-based game yes. as well, so you need an app. But every game, you put in a unique code for the game, which then creates a set of very new rules as how different planetary bodies relate to each other or how they behave. And by the research action, you get to sort of discover more and more of these rules, which helps with your overall deduction.
Mm-hmm. And basically all these actions on your turn, you can pick one action to do. And these actions all take different amounts of time. So if you want to scan like a huge swath of sky, that might be three time. And much like Patchwork or Nova Luna, whoever is farthest back is the one who's going to take the next turn. If you want to search, say, a much narrower part of the sky, two or three quadrants, then that is going to cost you extra time. So that's, I think it's kind of like a balance thing. You're getting more narrow information, but it costs you more time. You can also twice during the game do a targeted search. So you pick a section and you say, I just want to know what is there. And the game will tell you, the app is going to tell you that it's either empty sky, which means it could be truly empty, or it could have planet X there, or it'll say what planetary body is there. So you want to time that well, because you only have two of them, and they also use up 4 time when you use it. So that's a pretty big time jump. As well, as the game progresses, you are going to be able to start publishing theories. So you can pick, you'll have little cardboard chits behind your player screen that represent the different planetary bodies. And each time you get to one of those, you can put one of those out on the board. It kind of starts at that top back thing. And every time you get to a theory phase, they're going to move closer and closer. Once they get to the middle of the board, it's time for peer review. Mm-hmm. And you get to flip it over and use the app to tell you if you're correct. If you're correct, you're going to get some points at the end of the game. You'll get a bonus point if you're the first one to figure that out. If you're not correct, though, it's not a huge deal. You just lose 1 time, so you have to move forwards 1. And it definitely rewards you for guessing. Like, it's not a huge deal to be wrong, and you can win. I thought
there was a punishment for it, for some reason.
There was.
It was just like, but by one, you lose out 1 mm-hmm. time, right?
You watched me be wrong a couple of
times.
Yeah,
but I thought, like, overall, you would have gotten a point. Point punishment,
no.
Which you don't. This game ends when someone eventually finds Planet X, but just because you are the person that finds it doesn't mean that you're winning, because this really isn't a race game. It's, at the mm-hmm. end of the day, it's really a point game. Oftentimes, if you're really quick in finding it, you probably would win, but there is also a way to win where you just get a lot of accurate research.
In theories, yeah.
Like, there's getting a lot of points from that.
The first person to find Planet X gets 10 points, but the second person would get 8 points, 6 points. So it's not a huge deal to not be the first.
No. Now, here's the thing. This is a very, you know, incredibly, in my mind, detail-oriented game. So if you, like me, are not very detail-oriented in the sense that, you know, you just kind of scan through things and then just make the assumption that that's the right rule when clearly and obviously that is not the right rule. Say, for instance, that Planet X can't be next door to the dwarf planet. And if you read that rule and you thought that, oh, the Planet X is definitely next door to the dwarf planet, again, you will have a bad time. You will have a bad time. Same as if you did not distinguish between asteroids and comets, who knew that they were different? I didn't. You're going to have a bad time. If you have chicken scratch writing like me and you jot down notes thinking that, oh yeah, I can definitely read it later, and you come back and you can't read it, you're going to have a bad time.
So tell me, Sharon, did you have a bad time playing this?
I had a great time. I loved this game. It was a lot of fun, and I'm going to play it again. And I feel like this is going to be one of those games where even a solo play would be totally similarly as fun.
Yeah, we haven't really found many deduction games that we've just really clicked with. Like, I think we mentioned before, The Alchemists was one of our first games ever. And
surprisingly, I had less of a bad time with The Alchemist when I played it, but that was years ago.
I think that's because there was a much easier system for tracking things.
Oh, maybe.
You didn't actually have to take notes.
Maybe, yeah.
Okay. We need to play it again, but I think there was so much more going on. And I remember neither of us wanted to publish theories that could be wrong. Like, we would wait until we were sure. Whereas this game, who cares? And there's less going on. It's more purely about that deduction.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed it.
I enjoy this much more than Planet Unknown. I know those are two different games, but it's the two games I keep mixing up, and they're planet themed. But I like this game more, even though they're apples to oranges, really. I find me wanting to come back and play this game on a scale of 1 through 5, 1 being you have to pay me to play this game. I don't want to play this game ever again. To 5, let's stop this podcast and let's play this game. I think this game for me is a solid 4.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yep, I quite enjoyed it. It was just very pure, not overly complicated. Like, you could sit there and think things out. Mm-hmm. It was strategic. Like, you'd wanted to... You really had to think about what is the best course of action at this given time, as well a little twist as your pawns are moving around, as you take your time taking actions. The sky also is shifting with you. So basically the planet rotates around the sun. So there's only a certain section of sky that's visible at any given time, which I thought was a really cool mechanism. So if you want to do like a scan,
yeah,
it has to be in the visible section. So, which led to a funny part towards the end of the game. I was pretty sure I knew where Planet X was. Like, my next turn, I was going to guess. And then Sharon asked me on her, she's like, Can I, like, guess where Planet X is if it's not in the visible section? And I had a panic because I was pretty sure I knew where it was, and it was in the visible section.
Yeah, that's when you erroneously think that Planet X definitely is right next door to the dwarf planet.
That is when you realized.
That's when I realized that I need to read things carefully, apparently.
Well, it didn't help, because I think one of the research things told us that Planet X would be within 4 sections of the dwarf, around the dwarf planet.
It was great.
But yeah, I think super excited. I could see us picking this one up when I'm allowed to buy games.
Yeah, because it's different enough. We don't have a lot of pure deduction games, and sometimes we don't particularly like it. Because I'm thinking about there's that one game where you're in a city. I think there's one that's in New York, and you're trying to turn lights on and off.
Mr. Jack.
Thank you. Yes. That game.
Yeah, I didn't. I think because it's that cat and mouse thing.
Maybe. I don't like that.
Whereas this, you're both competing to figure out the same puzzle.
Yeah, and you know, fair. This is not a game with too much interaction. It's mostly a solitary game.
It is, yeah.
I mean your opponent might research something and, you know, aid you in furthering information you have about the sky.
Oh yeah, the notepad had spots for you to record what your opponents were doing.
Yeah, like we definitely weren't at that level just yet, but no. I mean, I was at the level of trying to read my writing, so I was several levels beneath that.
But, well, and you might be interested to know, there is a new, I guess, re-implementation, or I think it's a new game based on the same system.
Oh, okay.
The Search for Endangered Species.
I might be wrong on the name.
I've heard from previews that it's more complicated.
Oh, exactly.
So I think we need to play this quite a bit, you know, get ourselves up to that expert mode before we need to contemplate searching for endangered species.
It's just like, you know what would make this game even better? To add more complications so that my chicken scratch notes can really truly capture the whole experience of reading rules wrong and making obviously incorrect assumptions. The game literally told me that it is impossible for Planet X to be right next to the dwarf planet. And what did I read? I said it is totally possible.
And it reminds you on your player screen.
Yeah, it does. There's multiple reminders. If you are not like me, you will be absolutely fine. It's totally not the game's fault. It's my fault. It's me.
Well, it's nice for me to have a game.
It's me.
It's nice for me to have a game where my meticulous planning, I can excel. Yeah,
that's true. That's very true. Mm-hmm. Your type A personality really, really shines through.
Yeah, it's great. Great for that.
It's great for that.
Lots of fun.
All right. So we started our day searching for Planet X. Jaina was victorious in that search. And then because I, as a disgraced scientist, having a completely opposite theory postulated out in public, thinking that Planet X is right next to the dwarf planet, which in scientific communities is, a clear basic principle, I turned to addictive spices.
And taking over the...
Yeah, I turned dark. I turned dark, and I was like, you know what?
You started your dark spiral.
Drown my sorrows in spice liquor, spice and water. And so we traveled across the universe to Dune.
Imperium.
Yeah, well, the planet is
the game. Yeah, the planet's Dune. So we've both played this previously, but not together. And in the interim, Sharon started listening to the audiobook of Dune.
Yes, and I got really into it. It's such a great IP.
So she was excited.
I mean, very misogynistic at some points. It's like really so many years into the future and you're still bringing up like misogynistic, super patriarchal tropes. Is that really necessary? But that is not for this podcast. Right. The world of Dune. Continue.
So we both played it separately. We both really liked it. And we were like, you know what? Let's find out. Since we can't buy games, we might as well actually test and find out if this plays well at 2. Because if it does, we're like, this is going on the to-buy list.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, a little bit skeptical at the beginning, because at a 2-player game, you need to use a bot. And, you know, some games are good with bots. Other games, the bots really take away from the experience. And, you know, Dune Imperium has a bot.
Which actually wasn't that bad. It was pretty straightforward.
We later also found out that you could also download an app
so that it can be more of an automated process. But honestly, playing it analog style with the bot was very low maintenance and very, very easily manageable.
Yes. And I think I saw somewhere there was an app, but I wanted the full experience. But I think next time I could definitely see using the app. Mm-hmm. It just saves the shuffling. Mm-hmm. But I guess quick summary in Dune Imperium, it is a race to 10 victory points. And you are getting victory points through winning conflicts, through the Spice Must Flow cards. That's very important.
Is it, though?
I don't know.
I didn't have a single card that was Spice Must Flow.
And you won, fair enough. Yeah. I had all of them. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah. You can get more points by increasing on the...
Oh, yes.
You're making almost like tech trees, but no. You're just alliances. Creating alliances and, yeah, really building relationships with factions. Different factions.
Yeah.
Whether it's the Fremen, whether you're allying yourself with the guild, Spice Guild, the interplanetary guild thing. The Emperor, who is the existing ruler of the galaxies, or with the Bene Gesserits.
Yes. So every time you take an action in one of their worker placement spots, you get to go up. Some other things will let you go up there. And basically it's a worker placement deck building game. So you start with two workers, you get to put them out. Basically the trick here is you need to have a card in your hand that will allow you to go to the location you want to go. So if I want to go somewhere on Dune, Arrakis, I need to have a card that has the Arrakis symbol on it so I can go there. Mm-hmm. And much like other worker placement spots, once someone's there, it's blocked. As well, those guild faction areas are different symbols. So you are kind of slowly pulling together a strategy. Like, do you want, I ended up just kind of falling into the strategy of I could get spice. My power, because everyone's playing as a character in the Dune universe. Mm-hmm. And mine, every time I played my signet card, which is one of your starting cards, I got a spice. So I just kind of leaned into that. Pretty early on, I got enough spice to buy one of those, the Spice Must Flow cards. And each of those cards gives you a victory point. So I leaned into that. And I started trying to just increase my spice production so I could buy those.
Mm-hmm. My special ability was just coin. Mm-hmm. That's not what they're actually called, but coin essentially. But I also acquired cards that really defined my strategy. So I had a really good card that allowed me to double the base production of the spice when I enter a location. So that helped me with my spice engine, especially since I got the card quite early on. So it came up quite a bit. And then also I also found a way to get, because of that spice engine, I was able to get water relatively easy as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I really stuck to the spice and water and being really secure in that. And then making sure that I go into conflicts to win those 2 points at a time.
Yeah. So for us, the fun part of the game is the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And
for sure. Without the conflict, this wouldn't be the same game.
No. And I realize I misspoke, of course, because early on I wasn't able to get the Spice Must Flow cards because I had lots of spice. I was able to get lots of money because I had lots of spice.
Oh, you're right.
And then I got my third worker really early on.
You did. It was scary.
And it seemed like I was just chugging along. I won a couple of the conflicts early on. Mm-hmm. You're also getting intrigue cards that will either be plot cards that you can play on a normal turn or a conflict card that you can play during a conflict to increase your prowess in battle.
Mm-hmm.
And the conflict is kind of just like a basic area majority with a few little twists. On the board, every player has their own little garrison area, which is just a circle. And certain actions are going to let you put troops into your garrison. But just because they're in the garrison doesn't mean that they're actually going to be in the conflict. When you go to certain places on the board that have little cross swords, that is when you're able to move those troops from your garrison into the conflict. You can, any troops that you generate from that action, you can put straight into the conflict. And on top of that, you can choose to move two from your garrison into the conflict if you want. And every troop in there is going to give you two base conflict points, basically. And then at the end of the round, when you're done taking actions, everyone has to then reveal the remaining cards that are in their hand, and they'll have certain actions or benefits on the bottom of them. So some of those are going to let you then increase your
combat level.
Yeah, your combat level. That's mm-hmm. the one. Mm-hmm. And then as well, you could be holding some of those intrigue cards that could let you increase that as well. So it's kind of a game of chicken. Mm-hmm. You can get a pretty big base level by throwing a bunch of troops in there. But at the end of the round, you're going to lose them. They're all going to come back into your supply and you have to get them back out on the board again. So it's really tricky because each round, I guess, is a different conflict card and they're randomized. There's level one, level two, level three, and there's randomization within those. So you're kind of waiting. You turn a card up and you're like, ooh, do I want this? Is this worth it? And I think I went early on when I could win some mm-hmm. on ones that may or may not have been worth it. I think yeah. I got a point. I forgot that they got really good later on. And then I just could not win a conflict to save my life.
Yeah, I think there was definitely some chance in luck too, because there were definitely certain conflicts where the bot decided that, you know what, that sounds like a party. I'm gonna join in. And whenever a bot joins in on the fight, we also turn another bot card over, which mm-hmm. which acts as kind of like the reveal stage that players do. And if in that reveal there are extra sort of combat boosters, then you add that accordingly. And there was at least one time
yes.
where the bot decided to go in on the conflict. You turn a card around. There was like five or six.
Oh yeah, you were very scared. I wasn't even in this. I didn't have a chance. So I didn't
oh yeah,
even
it was
bother.
Me.
It was just you. And normally bots pick on me in these
my
games.
Gosh, yeah.
But really I remember you were penning. You're like, oh, should I play this? Should I not? And I picked up the card for the bot, and yeah. I'd happened to see that there were five swords
yeah,
on it, and
yeah,
you guys were like two apart.
Yeah.
And I just had to sit there with a straight face, like,
yeah. It was interesting because our play, like, I was not doing well at the beginning compared
no.
to you, because I couldn't win conflicts. My engine was slow to warm up. You were just flowing with gold.
I surged forwards, but then I stagnated because I just couldn't find the conflict cards, could not buy those, couldn't get those in. And then once we got more points for conflicts, I was just, and I kept thinking, oh, I can, I have an intrigue card. And I kept getting intrigue cards that would reward me for winning a conflict.
Oh,
so I kept,
darn.
I probably should have pulled back from the conflicts.
Yeah, yeah.
But I kept trying to win conflicts because I had, you know,
the
I'm like,
cards.
Oh, I can right. do this. This was really going to help if I can, but I think after the third round, I never won a conflict.
So this game, I know we've talked about this before. I've played this at, I think it was a max player. I want to say it was five players. And
four. It would have been four.
It would have been four. Okay, so four players. And I've played this at, two.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the four-player game was the first time I played this game. I loved it so much because there was so much tension, especially in the conflict field. But when you have more people that's conniving and jousting for spots and jousting for alliances, it made the game really fun and bitey. Two players, I was quite skeptical and honestly pleasantly surprised. I won't say it plays as awesome as, you know, the four player,
mm-hmm.
but I'm willing to bet that if we played this at three player versus a two player plus a bot, it would be very similar.
Yeah
I
mean, again, the thing with bots for me when it's worker placement bots, mm-hmm. Like this game, like Everdell, they're flipping a card. You can't try and predict what spot they're going to go into,
right.
But especially when you only have two workers here, I find it works a little better because two, maybe three workers, you just have to go, where do you need first,
mm-hmm.
and what's going to be really bad if you don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I wasn't trying as much to block worker placement spots because you don't even know, depending on the cards in your hand, you just may not be able to go certain places.
I think the bot's a lot more punishing at the beginning because it
yes.
only has two workers and it never really increases it can.
Yeah, so if it flips the card, I think it's the Swordmaster's,
mm-hmm.
then it will get its third worker. It just never came up.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah, because
okay.
there's also a card in the bot deck that you just randomly shuffle in that says shuffle the deck.
Oh, okay.
And it came up really, like,
I think came up a couple of
first,
times.
Or it was, like, the second card we drew, and then it came up again, so it just never got to its Swordmaster card.
Oh, okay. Well, I think that the bot was wonderfully designed, and
mm-hmm.
I'm kind of looking forward to playing this game at three, just so that I could really compare and contrast a
mm-hmm.
three real person game versus a two player with a bot game. I'm also curious if there's three, whether we can do three person plus a bot and see how that might feel like. But I think, I don't remember where I placed this from a scale of 1 to 5 when we first talked about this.
I remember that it was your game, it was your favorite game of GlobFest.
It is, but I was going to say this is a 4.5 for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I could play it right
now. I'm not stopping the podcast to play it right now because it's the end of a Thursday and, you know, it's not overly thinky, but it's still thinky.
But also we don't own it, so.
Oh, yeah. So it's a 4.5. So it's a 4.5 for me. How about you?
Yeah, I think I'm solid 4 or 4.5.
Yeah.
I wanted to get in, figure out what I did wrong and fix it.
Yeah, between this and that's the Search for Planet X, if we can only get one game, I'm going to get this game.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. I support that.
Yeah.
There's also lots of expansions for it.
Did we end up buying Scythe, by the way?
No.
Oh, okay.
I think I'd prefer this over Scythe.
I think so, too. I was going to say, it's just theme-wise, not really the same, but I think I like this more than Scythe, too. Like, Scythe does have, definitely has some level of combat, deceptively not a lot, actually. But there's just some, it's so simple and elegant. Here, you don't have to move things around to challenge people and
do all of
that stuff.
There's something about this, especially since we played it having no interest in the IP at all.
Yeah.
So.
I'd say the IP made it maybe a little better for me, just thematically, necessarily how the game operated. I'm glad I got to know the IP and got to play it again.
Yeah, we dived in a little bit. We've watched the movie now, so I'm a little more familiar. But honestly, my IP is Star Wars.
Which is a perfect segue for our third game.
See how I did that?
Planned it.
Almost.
What's the third game that we played?
So the last game we're talking about today is Star Wars, the deck building game. Which was designed by Caleb Grace and published by Fantasy Flight Games. And I'd heard of this. I mean, it came out this year. And I was intrigued. I was like, it sounded like a pretty basic deck building game. We went through our big deck building phase quite a while back with Hogwarts Battle getting us into it. Then we just dove in, bought a bunch of deck builders. I wouldn't say I'm over it. I still like deck building. But I was like, do we need it? I don't know. But then when I saw it at the board game cafe, I was like, yep, this is the one. We're going to try this out. And so we did. It was pretty quick and easy to read the rules and get into. If anyone has played Star Realms, it's very similar to that. It's a two-player only game where one player is going to be taking the side of the Imperials, the other player will be the Rebellion, and you're going head-to-head. Over the course of the game, you're going to be choosing your bases. So there is a starter base for each player. Once that base is destroyed by the opposing player, the kind of cool thing is you then get to go and pick your next base. So they have 10 bases for each side, and the bases have their own special abilities. Like maybe it's something you get to do when you first reveal the base, or an ongoing benefit while the base is out. And it looked like we didn't compare them head to head, but it looked like there was some overlap where that would be like it's not the same planet, but they would be the same. But then I think you had some unique bases. I had some bases with unique powers. Mm-hmm. And then the other kind of unique thing for this game is you have your quote unquote market row, which in this is called the galaxy row of 6 cards. And the deck is a mix of neutral cards, which are available for both players. Then you have your rebel cards, which only the rebellion player can buy. And you have your Imperial cards, which only the Imperial player can buy. Mm-hmm. However, those cards, while they're in that galaxy row, if there was an Imperial card that seemed, you know, really, really good and I didn't want Sharon to get it, like when Darth Vader came up, I can attack that card. Mm-hmm. I will get a benefit when I successfully get rid of it. And then that card's gone.
It's you did like very discard. Easily just got rid of Darth Vader. Didn't
oh,
you?
Yeah. And it was just like a basic bounty hunter, not even Boba Fett. And like some other no-name character just like took out Darth Vader. No problem.
I think he was just having a bad day, honestly.
He must have just been having an off day.
But like, yeah, he took my Darth Vader. It was really sad. But hey, you know what? I had a lot of nice ships, really good bases, and apparently a lot of pew-pews.
Yeah.
I'm very... Force was not with me most of the time, but
because that's the other mechanism. On your side. Well, the force can flip back, and there's like a little. Are you done?
I'm done now.
You're sure?
Yeah, the force flipping.
Okay. So there's a force track, and certain cards that you play will basically give you a force boost and able to bring it to your side, or, you know, shoving it. So it's like this little tug of war. The rebellion starts with the force on their side, and you never actually really played with it all that much. I don't think you ever had it fully onto your side.
No. And no, the force refused to be with me.
Yeah, no. Because well, Darth Vader got taken out.
Yeah, that's true.
Never saw the
But Emperor. Usually if Darth Vader gets taken out, the whole force tries to balance itself. So the force generally would, if you look at the physics of the universe, go towards the dark side because now there is an imbalance in the universe. Anyways, I digress. Continue.
Yeah, so otherwise it's a very classic deck building game. There's you're getting cards. Mm-hmm. Cards can give you, again, force energy that lets you maneuver that track. There's resources, which lets you buy cards. And then there's pew-pews, which let you damage, you know, either do damage to their base. You can pick up capital ships that you can plop down in front of your base to help protect it. Or you can take out their characters. Now, for me, and I am going to blame this, the force on the force track may have been with me. But luck was not on my side.
Mm-hmm.
I think Chewie came out pretty early and I snatched him up. And that was the only decent, decent rebel character that came out. Like, my cards were kind of garbage. And because you have six cards, you're just pulling off the top of the 90-card deck. It's hard. You can't really cycle the deck. And I think there was a variant in the back that maybe would have let us clear out the market row.
I think they try to balance things by, you know, if your enemy cards are turned up, you could potentially attack them to get a reward.
But then you're not attacking the base.
Exactly. So it's like, well, is it really worth it? And I don't know, like in a game like that, I'm really curious if we were to rewind time and play the game exactly the same, if you instead focusing on the base, but focus on attacking the cards out front to get the rewards. I'm just curious whether that would be a better game or not.
I don't know, because most of the rewards I did a couple of times. I don't think you ever attacked any of my cards.
No.
But I did attack two or three of yours.
Yeah.
But the rewards were often resources to buy another card.
Oh.
But they were never good cards. So I started trying to get, I was like, okay, well, maybe this card, if it comes up with this card, but my deck just got bloated even though I was culling.
Well, despite our, oh, you did cull a lot.
I did cull a lot.
But I was going to say, despite your bad luck, though. It felt like, you know, yeah, you were always a bit of an underdog, but we were like,
it was
probably
close.
One round away. Like, if you got to play another round and I wasn't able to defeat you at that time, I would have been toast.
You took out my last base, which we played the quote unquote full game. So we played to four bases and we could choose from all 10 of them. And you took out my last base. I think you had just revealed your last base when you took mine out. And you just had a huge pew-pew.
Yeah, I think it was like 13 or something.
It kept happening. When I wasn't able to get the pew-pews, I started getting cards that would let me take damage off my base.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time, they would come into my hand right after you destroyed a base. So I had no damage to get rid of.
You had nothing to repair because you didn't have anything to repair.
Again, supposedly the force was on my side. I don't think so.
I don't think the force understands how to be on anyone's side.
Fair enough. It's just there.
I like this game. I'm thinking about the other, like, 1v1 two-player games, card games especially. Not a deck builder, but, you know, the first one that comes to mind, of course, is Air, Land, and Sea. Very different game.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm bad at that game.
Yeah.
You've never won a single game. No, I don't think so.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, well, that game's a lot, like, easily carryable.
It's a different game,
but
it is,
right? Yeah. No, I agree.
I think one that this reminds me the most of that we played, because we don't tend to play Duelers.
No, we have that.
Two-player Duelers very often.
We did have a dueling game, but it was, like, Harry Potter themed.
Oh, we still have that.
What is that?
Like Hogwarts Battle.
But duel?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, we just need
that
to
has some problems. We should try it again. Mm-hmm. But I think the one this reminded me the most of would be Radlands.
Oh, okay.
I mean, not really, because
I was going to say it feels different, too.
It does feel different, because this is really a deck builder. But I remember playing it. I think I was just a little underwhelmed. I wanted to like it more than I did, because I really do like Star Wars. And oh, we have really? No Star Wars games.
Okay.
And I was hoping, oh, well, this is quick and easy. I don't know, though. My intuition, and I don't know if this would actually, quote unquote, fix it, but I think because that deck has 90 cards, you've got Imperial cards, Rebel cards, and neutral cards, I would split the deck into those three different piles. And you always have two of each available because the Galaxy Row has six cards. So you'd always have two Rebels, two neutral, and two Imperial cards. And then if you took out a Rebel card, I'd flip a new Rebel card or something just to try and keep it more balanced.
I think they didn't do that because, like, on my side there, I actually played that base, right? The base card said that I get to deal as many damage to your base directly based on the number of enemy cards out in the Galaxy Row.
So you'd have to adjust probably a couple other things. Yeah, so that could be adjusted.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that I bet there are a couple of cards that are also contingent on how random that row is.
Yeah, because I'm thinking to do that, you could just deal as much damage as there is like pew pews on the Rebel cards rounded down or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think there'd be ways. And again, I don't know that that would fix it. It's fine. It's fine.
Okay, so you're underwhelmed. I'm not overwhelmed, but it was better than expected. I'm not a huge fan of, again, it's funny. I'm not a huge fan of space games or like, essentially like space cowboy games, which basically is Star Wars. But I actually surprisingly enjoyed it more than I expected. Okay. So
yeah. Yeah. I'd be happy to play it again. Mm-hmm. It was pretty quick.
Yeah. 1 of 5. Where would it be? 1 being someone will have to pay you to even think about playing it, and 5 being let's stop the podcast and play it right away.
I'm going to say a 3. It might be a 2.5, but I'm going to say a 3.
Okay.
Because I think I do want to try it again. I want to see. It might have just been an off day. Maybe I was annoyed because I couldn't find the cards. You're getting tired. I think it's better than my initial impression is giving it credit for.
I actually will put it, okay, I was debating between 3.5 and a 4.
Oh.
I put it a 4. I just simply right now, I kind of want to play it again.
Yeah.
But yeah, so 3.5 to a 4.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I will happily play it again. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And that's it. That's all.
That's it. That's
all. Those are all 3 games. We did play one more game.
We played a couple more games. But they weren't space themed, so we can't talk about them.
So we can't talk about them. That's just how the law works.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Like, legally speaking, we can't talk about them.
Because they're not space themed.
They're not space themed. So that's it. Have you guys played any of these games? Let us know.
Mm-hmm.
How can they let us know?
On Instagram.
Uh-huh.
On our guild.
Uh-huh.
On our guild on BoardGameGeek. By Discord. Email.
Oh, of course, yes.
Discord. Those are all in our show notes.
Mm-hmm. But you know what would really make our day? If you go to wherever you get your pods, slap us a good review.
Bonus points if it's Apple Podcasts, so I've heard.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay. And give us some stars, give us some comments.
We talked about lots of stars.
Yeah. Give us a shout out. We would love you forever. And we'll do a shout out here too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think, guess that's it. That's all.
Ooh!
Oh.
Final question.
Uh-huh.
Did you like Star Wars, the deck building game, enough to buy it when we're allowed to? Where is it on that, like,
hype train? I think it depends on the mood. I'm not saying no, but I think it depends on the mood.
Okay.
Really?
Okay.
And if the price is right.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, we have a lot of games.
I'm getting a little itchy to buy games, if you haven't noticed.
Yeah, let's try and manage that, but you're still in that competition.
Yeah.
Okay, but until then, stay Gansy.
And happy gaming.